host, Gary Moore.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Today, you're going to learn about oat seeds can help reverse high cholesterol levels from Dambah University in Saudi Arabia and published in the Journal of Medicinal Plant Research. About 12 more studies also, several dealing with living a longer life. Then today is a day dedicated to commentaries and serious analysis. We're going to hear from Chris Hedges, from Truthdig, the Great American Shakedown. Then you'll have an opportunity to share your points of view. We're also going to be sharing with you some videos. Now, you can watch these videos or you can listen to them. If you're on the internet, you can simply go to write this down. This is for you to watch as well as listen to it. And also, I'm going to give you a couple phone numbers that you should have. You can watch the videos on YouTube by going to youtube.com/PRNFM. youtube.com/PRNFM. 97% more or less of our audience listen to this program, not in live time, Eastern Standard Time each day at noon, but rather in the evening, and they listen over their computer or their cell phone. Let me give you that archive number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976, and you can listen live every day. Now, the old number is full, so I'm giving you a new number. We've expanded the bandwidth, 774-337-6068, 774-337-6068. And we also have an interesting four-minute commentary I'm going to share with you. And then from last evening's Mark Levin show, which I don't watch, but I was sent a clip with Alan Dershowitz. And Alan Dershowitz, who is a Democrat and supported Hillary Clinton, as he states, he's actually supporting why Trump should not be impeached on the charges. That doesn't mean that Trump shouldn't be impeached. Doesn't mean he's a good president. Doesn't mean, as this audience knows, my feelings about Donald Trump and his administration in its entirety. But I also had the same feelings about Barack Obama and his entire, well, actually wasn't his cabinet. As we know from WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, the head of Citigroup selected Barack Obama's cabinet. And I didn't support George Bush, and I didn't support Bill Clinton, and I've shared those reasons on multiple occasions. So the question is not about impeaching someone that you don't like, but do they actually have the right reason for impeachment? Because all you see nonstop, 24/7 on all the television, including cable, is that this man should be thrown out of office. All right. So who do you want to take his place? Well, they wanted Hillary Clinton. So this is really about Hillary Clinton. Why would you want Hillary Clinton? Well, because of what she represents to the deep state. She and Bill Clinton are its leading advocates, as was Barack Obama. For example, in one case, and I'll give this to you in depth tomorrow, Barack Obama saw that a publishing company received over $365 million on a project. That same publishing company, when Barack Obama was no longer in office, gave him a $60-plus million contract. I'm not aware of anyone in history receiving $60 million to write a book. And there's no way in the world they're going to make that money back. That is simply impossible. Being an author of over 100 books, including over 70 bestsellers, selling tens of millions of books, I can tell you there's a basic accounting that you can follow in what it costs you to publish a book, how many you're going to get back, what the royalty should be. So this is the kind of favoritism that happens. He's also going to be doing a series of Wall Street lectures, the very Wall Street that he bailed out, the Wall Street that he did not allow his Justice Department to bring any of the heads of those banks to justice. Many different ways to pay to play. And yet all that is overlooked. The invasion and destruction of Libya, that's genocide by any measure, overlooked. Regime change in Honduras, Ukraine, overlooked. Spying on Americans, overlooked. Supporting the Defense Authorization Act, where we no longer have habeas corpus or the right of counsel, overlooked. So if you're going to apply your principles of hating someone, apply them equally. Hate everybody in politics. That's where I would begin. Or at least not hating them, because I don't believe that's a positive virtue at all. But rather, anyone who needs the power to be in office is the least likely to use it constructively. So we're going to deconstruct both sides. And that's part of what we're going to start today. For example, when we heard about everything going on with Ukraine, we decided to look at the real experts on Ukraine, the journalists like E. Bartlett, who was there and who's written a very revealing article about before Trump was even thinking about going into politics or running for president, the Obama administration was already deep in politics, along with Hillary Clinton, of doing business with him. We'll get to that on an upcoming program. We begin with the latest on health and healing. Oats are they're a type of whole grain food. They offer a lot of healthy benefits. It's a veritable source of fiber, and a good fiber because it can draw out toxins from the intestine, help it clean up any debris you might have in there. And it helps you lose weight. The more fiber, the more weight you lose. Oats also contain a high level of antioxidants. That, in turn, fights inflammation and reduces the risk of chronic disease. And research on its history suggests that before oats were considered as food, they served various medicinal purposes. In a new study published in the Journal of Medicinal Plant Research, a group of scientists at Benha University in Egypt and Taba University in Saudi Arabia looked into the ability of oats to lower blood cholesterol. And they found that oat seed extracts can improve lipid metabolism and restore normal liver function in this experiment, and especially for those suffering from hyperlipidemia. And by the way, I don't want to assume that you know what hyper, meaning elevated, lipid, meaning fats, and edema, which can mean a swelling, a congestion. Hyperlipidemia is defined as abnormally high levels of lipids or fats in the blood. Now, these lipids or fats can come in many forms, most notably cholesterol and triglycerides, the two types of fat involved in heart disease and liver disease. Low levels of these high-density lipoproteins, or the good cholesterol, and high levels of the bad low-density lipoproteins, the bad cholesterol, greatly contribute to cardiovascular disease. Together with triglycerides, too much cholesterol can harden or clog the arteries, which eventually leads to heart attacks and strokes. Meanwhile, a diet rich in cholesterol and triglycerides will also compromise your liver function. Now, this type of diet leads to fat accumulation in the liver, which in turn causes irreparable damage that affects your liver's ability to function well. The liver not only detoxifies blood and helps eliminate drugs from the body, it also stores nutrients and breaks down proteins and fats. So hyperlipidemia is a major health concern worldwide. Now, there are a lot of medications that can reduce blood cholesterol, but there are serious side effects, and that's not good. So why not look for something that can do the same thing as a medication, but do it without the harmful side effects and do it naturally? And that's what oats does. Also, by the way, coconut oil is good in this whole detoxification process as well. From Aarhus University in Denmark comes a natural remedy for osteoporosis. And it's simple. Red clover. Yes, red clover, scientifically known as Trifolium prantis, is a small plant that flowers across Western Asia and Europe and parts of Africa. It's traditionally used as medicine in these regions to treat different health conditions. They generally consume it as a tea. And one of the highlights of red clover is its high phytoestrogen content, which makes it an attractive natural hormone replacement therapy for women with menopause or even perimenopause. Now, these are naturally occurring plant compounds that function similarly to body estrogen because they interact with the same cell receptors. But you want more of the phytoestrogens from plants to get on those cells because then it blocks the estrogens from meat getting on those same cells. The ones from meat, which are different biochemical configuration, can lead to cancer, estrogen-dominant cancer. The ones from vegetable-based, plant-based, lead to protecting you from cancer. So red clover is used as an excellent supportive therapy for osteoporosis in menopausal women, particularly on its effect on bone mineral density. So researchers from Denmark performed a randomized placebo-controlled trial to investigate the effects of daily consumption of red clover on bone health in healthy menopausal women. Their article was published in the evidence-based Complementary and Alternative Medicine Journal, and they used 150 milligrams of red clover extract daily, where another group was given a placebo. And after 12 weeks, the researchers observed the daily supplement of red clover extract had a positive effect on bone health, and that didn't happen with the placebo group. So, one more thing, one more piece to our health puzzle. From University Hospital in Spain comes a study about women, exercise, and longevity. And what the university says is this, that women who can exercise vigorously are at significantly lower risks of dying from heart disease, cancer, and other causes. The research was just presented at the EuroECHO, a scientific congress of the European Society of Cardiology. So exercise as much as you can. Fitness protects against death from any cause. That was the takeaway message. Well, you know that exercise is good for your health and longevity, but this is helping additionally all those women who are now no longer being able to help support a full bone structure and bone mineralization. So it's do the exercise, do vigorous exercise, power walk, race walk. That'll help. From Columbia University Medical Center comes a study that ties in with what I've been sharing. In fact, I did 17 lectures on how we get depressed or anxious at the ongoing, and we have another 3 weeks to go to finish 90 days or 3 months. We're finished the first two stages. Now we're in what is called the self-awareness stage. What do I mean? And I'll explain this. Stage one is rather intense. It's taking a group of people who may or may not be fully involved in their health, who are over the age of 70, and showing them the type of exercise, the duration of the exercises, in order to test their body, flexibility, strength, endurance, stamina, and range of motion. That's one part, and this is all monitored by nurses and who measure all this. Stage two is detoxification. The assumption is that if you have been eating a lot of unhealthy foods, drinking unhealthy beverages, or doing something, medications or recreational drugs or alcohol, that all you have to do is stop. Of course, that would be very good, and it is, but that in itself does not repair the damage done. I was just speaking with a close friend who has a close friend who now is just diagnosed with throat cancer and couldn't figure out why. Well, the question was then, did he ever smoke and or did he have hot coffee? Both can contribute to inflammation of the esophagus and the throat and cause GERD and cause hydrochloric acid from the GERD to regurgitate back up into the esophagus. Now, because coffee is highly anabolic and very acidic, in time, that can lead to cancer. But it's not easy to detect. Kind of comes on you suddenly, not a lot of symptoms. So let's say you stop. You stop the coffee and you stop the cigarettes. That's good. But that does nothing to repair the damage. Now, I had this lecture just yesterday. Let me explain it for everyone. In my research around the world, when I traveled from the early 1970s right through until now, I always study patterns of belief in every culture. I find some cultures share similar views on life or raising family or the meaning of their life, on health, with other cultures. And what I found was the reason that I believe, based upon this research, that people in other countries are living a longer life is because, A, they're happier. They're less distressed. They spend more time with each other. Friendships are lifelong. Relationships, more often than not, are lifelong. And they don't have a question about why they're on this earth. The children are not spoiled. They still adhere to certain standards of character development, moral standards, societal input standards. You live in a society, you live in a group, whether it's a little hamlet out in the French countryside or whether it's in near the Blue Mountains outside of Montego Bay in Jamaica. You're not alone. There are other people who are always caring for you. Just kind of imagine as a metaphor, a baby elephant can't get across a road. There's a ditch, gets stuck in the ditch. It's not just his mother that will come to the aid of that little elephant. Every single elephant will come there. And they'll just get behind and get in front and grab his trunk and push him out. You're always cared for by the entirety of the herd. And they have one of the longest lifespans in the world. That's true of many other cultures of animals, but it has historically been true for humans that we have been led to believe with the philosophy, which is an artificial construct of manifest destiny, that as long as I determine that I want to do something, I have a right to do it, and I don't care about the consequences to other people or the land or animals. And this terribly destructive notion of manifest destiny became the calling of so many of the industrialists. As long as they were creating something that Americans needed, then how they got there was of no one's concern. And today we see our entire world is in crisis because we created that artificial crisis because we didn't care about the land. So there are cultures that learn that it is better to cooperate than to compete. It does not mean that you cannot grow. It means that what happens if your growth, your process of getting to where you need to go, causes other people to be less in their life. So the highly aggressive dynamic energies are always going to exceed those of the supporter bees of society. So anyhow, I was talking about what happens when we grow up in a society that is highly competitive and the expectations are unrealistic for what should allow us to be happy, and happy in our general society, not everyone by any means, but generally speaking, today, not historical, but today, success, happiness is how much have you been able to succeed. Now, the tools of that success are in business or investing or hedge funds or equity partners or being a professional, which means that economically you're going to have greater advantages on someone who's not a professional. You have a higher education, you have a greater ability to earn money. But then what happens when you've earned all that money and you bought all these things that are supposed to make you happy and you're still not happy? Or what if other people's expectations of you supersede your own expectation of yourself? So you're living through someone else's idea of what you would be as an ideal daughter or son, mother or father, aunt or uncle, brother or sister, as long as you don't disappoint those who have high-level expectations, so then you find you're never slowing down. You're never stopping. You have no concept of a journey. It's just destination goal, destination goal. Surely at one of these goals and destinations, I'll be happy. Never happens. Never happens. So that in turn leads to depression. That in turn leads to anxiety. You're leaving other people with an idea that what they wanted for you is not what you ended up creating. So anyhow, we live by illusions, and that affects our reality. So change your illusion, you can change your reality. And that's what I found around the world that we don't have here. People live more with an understanding of how to live in balance with each other and nature and harmonize than in conflict. Our whole society is based upon conflict. And through conflict, one of the tools we use is violence. But you can only commit violence if you have some power to get away with the violence you commit. And so therefore, we're an extraordinarily violent society. Look at our games. Look at our movies. Look at the kind of talk that people engage in. So, in any case, something to think about. So here at this study at Columbia University Medical Center, they found that brain differences are detected in children with depressed parents. This gets back to what I was suggesting about epigenetics. In other cultures where they really prize being a parent, a mother or father, where you're spending quality time with the child, you're teaching them boundaries, you're teaching them about life, you're teaching them cause and effect, you're teaching them morals and disciplines. Now, no child is going to live perfectly. They're going to go outside those bounds. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to get, hurt at different times, and that's a normal process of life. We don't want any of that. We don't want our children being exposed to anything, so we overwrap and overpackage everything. As a result, now the oceans are filled with plastic that no one asks themselves, do I really need, something like a simple little battery where I have to use scissors to get the damn thing out? You just can't open these with your hands anymore. It's a whole Rube Goldberg construction. We've made life unnecessarily complicated. But in the process, we've created hundreds of millions of bubbles that children are living through now and right through, and they don't outgrow this because we never have an exit sign that it's time to move on into being more mature. So you have 30-year-olds today who, in my own office last week, we were hiring some people, very well-paying job, interesting jobs. And every day I'd call and I'd speak with our IT person saying, how'd it go? Very interesting background, but then today they didn't show up. Didn't call, didn't show up. How many? Well, this is the seventh day that seven people were hired and never showed up. Never call. And this is a whole generation. The sense of entitlement. Come to work when you want, do as little as you want, and expect things, because that's the bubble they grew up in. That's epigenetics. That means their brain has been hardwired at this point to have expectations what other people are going to do for them and why they don't have to be responsible for themselves, because someone was always responsible earlier in life. So that also can work against you. The Nobo effect. If you are around parents that are always aggressive, always having more, always spending everything they make, no matter how much they make, they're always spending it. And all with the idea that if we just buy this one more thing or have this one more thing, somehow we'll feel better about ourselves. And then one day you wake up and you realize you got all this stuff and no one's happy. Everyone's confused, and especially those who are unprepared for the world they live in. They're only prepared to live in a world where there is no sense of responsibility or consequence. And I never find that outside of America. There's always a sense of responsibility. There's an ease by which people transcend from one stage of life to the other. Here, we're just dumped into this gigantic new bin saying, now you're an adult, now you're a parent, now you're part of the workforce. As if we're supposed to wake up and say, wow, that was easy. No, it's not. So the parents then, by their own mindset, their own insecurity, needing more and confused about happiness, as if something it you can obtain if you have the best-looking woman, best-looking man, best-looking partner, if you make enough money, if you live in the right place. You know, you got people who have, you know, a 300-foot yacht who are now depressed because someone else built a 400-foot yacht, so nobody's paying attention to you anymore. I mean, there was just a, if you can imagine the absurdity of this, this, and art today is totally absurd. I want nothing to do with modern art because it isn't art. It shows nothing in the way of uniqueness and talent and is catering to our cultural dumbing down. And there was a banana taped to a piece of wood. That's it. And it sold, what was 120,000 or 100 and some astronomical amount of money. And that was kind of, ooh, isn't that really neat? No, it's not neat. The last time I went and the last time I'll ever go to the Guggenheim Museum was when I took my daughter and we're walking around the spirals coming down. And she says, you know, you'd think that they would put away their work stuff, their ladders. And I said, that's not work stuff. That's someone's interpretation of art, having a plank of wood and a ladder with a hammer. She says, you're kidding. I said, I'm not kidding. We got over, there was a person. I said, is that a display, that ladder with a plank of wood and a hammer? Yeah. And Shelley said, that's not art. But you see, it's subjective. Anything is art. Anything today. And with the culture being as dumb as it is today, and it is dumb, then we suddenly accept it. We maladapt to the lowest common denominator in speech and philosophy and behavior and wonder why there's this gigantic void when it comes to intellect. I remember when I was first in New York, it was a humbling experience, and I accepted that I was not the brightest guy on the block, but I was interested in listening to those who were. Went up to the New Yorker Theater on 89th and Broadway, and up on the second floor, beside it was a bookstore, the New Yorker bookstore, and it was very comfortable, old couches and old chairs and lots of books, but these were not just normal books. These were all political, ideological books, a lot of them on Marxism, communism, Trotsky's memoirs, etc. Now, it's not that I accepted these. I simply wanted to see what was the basis of them coming to some realization that these were more legitimate than another philosophy. I was interested in the comparison. So I would just sit and listen to these people, and these were some wonderfully intellectual beings. It was always exciting for me after I put my daughter to sleep to go up, and because I lived down the block in this tiny little apartment on 89th between Riverside and West End Avenue. And so it was one block away, and I would be sitting there listening, and they'd ask me a question. I would just say, I'm from West Virginia. I'm just here. So let me learn a little more before I make a fool out of myself. And they'd smile. They were older people, some were in their 70s and 80s, and I'm in my early 20s. And the one thing you learn when you grew up where I grew up was, you know, there's a lot more to learn than what you know now. So you learn by listening, not by talking. And so I just listened. Where does that exist today? Where can a person go today and hear conversations with remarkable minds? Yeah, on the internet, not going to happen. Anyhow, so just remember, whatever doubts and fears and insecurities that your parents had, you're getting that encoded in your genes. That's this Columbia University Medical Center. So that's one of the reasons that approaching depression should be approached at how do you shift from the traditional approach to depression and anxiety, either pharmacological based, which doesn't work, contributes to the problem, or psychoanalysis, which sometimes can work. But it's if you start with the idea that what if your depression and anxiety were already in your, coded into your DNA from all the impressions that you absorbed that you could not intellectually understand but emotionally cataloged, then that can make a difference. This was published in the Journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. Also from the University of South Wales, which is in Australia, comes a study about how to control breathing, which elite athletes do, but it can average, the average person can benefit too. I remember once when I was taking a group of the athletes who were started as normal athletes. We start with no elite athletes, but many of them became elite athletes in our Natural Living, Running, and Walking Club, which still exists today, by the way. It started in 1975. We take a more holistic approach, and we went out for a run, and I could hear the people breathing up in their throat. And I said to them, breathe deep and relax. Relax your whole body. And because the deeper you breathe, the more oxygenation your cells get, and they won't go into oxygen debt, which creates lactic acid and the burn and the pain. And the more oxygen you have, the greater the adenosine triphosphate release, which means more combustion at the mitochondria, more energy. And so we just would close the right eye, look down at the ground with the left eye, and just relax ourselves and breathe real deep. And then every workout, we did the same exercise. Well, in came a inner city competition. It was all the athletic groups. I believe there was somewhere around 110 more or less teams, New York Athletic Club, the New York Roadrunners Club, Eastside Striders, all these, and our Natural Living Running and Walking. And it's a 10K race. And and we did it 2 years in a row. And the second year we had Sid Howard and Sam Skinner, myself. And it's a relay for 6.2 miles. And before, I just said, remember, this is a hilly course. Go back to your training. When you're running up the hills, look down with your right eye closed. Keep your left eye. That detaches the brain from being highly stressed. And just focus on your breathing. The other people are going to be running straight up. You're going to be leaning in. They're going to be breathing up in their throat, short breathing. Their muscles are going to be tight. They're not going to have the same release of energy. And Sid said, okay. But Sam Skinner had the flu. And we had an alternate. And I said, Sam, don't put yourself through this, buddy. You know, you're sweating. You got a fever. Rest. Take it easy. You don't need to do this race. No, I can do it. And I said, then just keep focusing upon the chi, the energy. Well, we won. Of all the teams, we hit, came in, got the gold medal. It's not because we were faster athletes. Though Sid Howard is the fastest miler in the world, and Sam Skinner and I have won about 1,000 races in World Games and others. We train hard. But are there faster athletes? Yes. Better athletes? Absolutely. But they're not doing it the same. It's how you train. That's where the mind comes in. Remember, what the mind believes, you can teach that lesson to yourselves. That's how I believe Bannister broke the four-minute mile. So just remember, look at how the elite athletes breathe, and then use that when you're doing your yogic exercise or meditating or just going out for a walk. It can make a difference. And finally, from the University of East Anglia, which is in the United Kingdom, published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, comes a study about eating blueberries. They say in this study that eating blueberries reduces heart disease risk. It improves arterial function. It lowers your cholesterol level. It helps you with type 2 diabetes. That's all good. In this test, they had one cup of blueberries per day for 6 months. And improve their vascular environment. So that's important. That's just one thing. It makes a difference. There was a separate article published in the Journal of Gerontology that collaborated that as well. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Noll. We're 34 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to go to a short video, audio. You can watch it by going to, again, YouTube.com/PRNFM. Back in a moment.
As a scientist, he still works. He's protected under the National Whistleblowers Act. He's saying they use his study to beat everybody to say, see, vaccines are safe. It's his study. Now, he tried to commit suicide, and it didn't work. So now he's received a conscience. His name is Dr. William Thompson. You can Google him.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the highest paid whistleblower attorney in the country. He wants to come clean. Mm-hmm. He's now admitting that he lied, that the MMR vaccine does give black boys autism at a rate 240% greater than their white counterparts. He knew it. He said the pharmaceutical industry is so strong and they got so much money. When he showed them that when black boys take this on schedule, it is absolutely toxic and damaging, and it's wiping black boys out, not with just autism, ADHD, ADD,
right,
all kind of allergies. So what the pharmaceutical industry is doing is getting a customer for life,
right?
Because they are the masters of cause and effect. And so when Bobby Kennedy was given this, he went to every nationally owned black leader you know. Not one of them would touch it.
Robert Kennedy Jr. was at my home a week or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
Kennedy can't get support because the pharmaceuticals have bought off Congress. Did you hear me? He can't get a congressman, a senator, to bring him before Congress and subpoena the whistleblower from CDC because the pharmaceuticals have bought off the Congress. I said, Mr. Kennedy, how formidable are your opposers? He had a chemist there. He had a billionaire there who's a philanthropist. And the billionaire looked at me and said, it's very difficult. I mean, well, CNN, he said, I could get on CNN tonight. He was on Bill Maher's show. But he said, they won't allow me to say this. Say, you can say anything else because the pharmaceuticals have bought off the media.
Wow.
I said, well, what about black preachers? Since it's directed against black males, what are we doing? He said, I'm sorry, they're not responding either. Some of us have been paid off by the pharmaceutical companies. I said, well, what about the Congressional Black Caucus? He said, I'm sure they would like to help, but they're weak. So that's why he showed up at my door.
Minister Farrakhan has asked me to address the issue of vaccines and African American and vaccine safety.
I'm prepared to go alone. Because if God is with me, I'm still the winner. It's just me and God.
Mm.
But it's a shame that we are so corrupt, so in love with money, that we will sell out the future of our people for a dollar bill.
He's absolutely correct. And when Robert F. Kennedy on several occasions has come on our program, he later told Richard, the producer, he said, I just want to share with you and Gary my appreciation because no one in the media will have me on. Tucker Carlson did. Good for Tucker Carlson having him on. I don't agree with a lot of Tucker's positions, but he is also on the right side of many positions as well. And I don't believe you just slam a door on people without communicating if they said something that makes sense and everyone else was too afraid to say it. So yes, here's the deal. A Dr. William Thompson, who was overseeing a project at the CDC, knowingly hid, which is a federal crime, and as was accompanied by all the other scientists going clear up to the top of the CDC, that African-American boys, 36 months and younger, had a 224 to 240% increase in autism spectrum disorder from the MMR vaccine. That's the same, at the same time, they were lying before Congress that there was no study showing any problem with vaccines, because we actually have Colleen Doyle testifying before Congress saying they didn't know about any such studies. Well, they were hiding this. And we would not have known this had it not been for him feeling some guilt and answer to Freedom of Information Act request that he had never done before to a Brian Hooker. And in one of the many conversations they were having about Brian's son, who's a professor out in California University, it happened after the vaccines, and then he admitted he did a mea culpa. And that's when Brian began to record their conversations. And all these conversations, which I've heard, in fact, I've used some of these in my film, the latest vaccine film I've done, was him admitting they lied, they covered it up. And the fact that they did it against black boys after they did the Tuskegee experiment, well, that's institutional racism. The Black Caucus, mute, not a word. Those who can find anything to within the black community to rail against legitimately found nothing they wanted to rail about in this. So it takes Louis Farrakhan, who a lot of people don't like, and it's understandable his language can be extraordinarily incendiary and insensitive, and many consider it racist because of his comments about Jews. But on this issue, he's on the right side of truth. Will anyone in the media pay attention to him because of his reputation? I doubt it. But there's a lot of people within his movement out there, and they can start by going down to Washington, D.C. I'd like to see a national strike of all African Americans in all jobs to bring attention to this and say, why won't you allow William Thompson to testify under oath before Congress and other members in his group, because it would completely destroy the argument that vaccines are safe and effective. It would completely indict the CDC, which oversees vaccines and has a patent that they own on the MMR vaccine, even though they license that to Merck. It would completely destroy the legitimacy of any vaccine at all. It would open up for all the other people who have been damaged by vaccines to come forward and testify, including pediatricians' own children. It would allow those of us like myself who've spent tens of thousands of hours on these issues to come forward and bring thousands of documents from peer-reviewed literature showing that the entire basis of vaccination is a fraud. It would challenge the New York Times, the Washington Post, that want to demonize people who have an issue with vaccination, mandatory vaccine. So it's only when you have a general strike, as they're having right now in France, and put the whole country came to a screeching halt because that buffoon named Macron, who's the president, who is a neoliberalist, by the way, and came out of the banking societies, it would draw attention to it. Oh, and by the way, as an aside, I have found the same thing that is happening with Robert F. Kennedy not getting any traction to get his message in the mainstream media. When I had cured a group of people with AIDS, 10 at the Institute of Applied Biology, 8 at the Tri-State Healing Center, 2 separate groups of physicians and scientists have both observed this over a period of years and wanted to hold a press conference to share this information, not in praise of myself, I didn't care about that, but rather to show that there were natural non-toxic methods in addition to their antiretroviral methods that could eliminate the HIV virus and bring a person back to health. We had the evidence. We had the biochemistry. We had everything. There's a documentary right now on GaryNall.com on healing AIDS naturally. Watch it. There are the people there, the patients, after they've been reversed their disease with their medical records, medical doctors, nurses, scientists, all on tape, all on video, telling the truth. And then you see AIDS is not a death sentence. That was the press conference. And there's Senator Patterson and all this group of scientists, and there's a room with 100 people, people who had improved their condition of HIV infection, massive disease, who are now, many of them HIV negative, the people I'd work with, but others who I didn't work with. Not a single member of the media came, not a single member of the gay community came, not a single, except those who were actually HIV infected, not a single member of the AIDS establishment came. Why? Yet if someone had a drug that could kill an elephant with one tiny dose, that would be praised. It would make the headlines in the New York Times because it was all controlled by a group in Washington and the manufacturers, complicit with the media. And yet, who shows up? A person named Kennedy from Tony Brown saying, we heard And we'd like to verify that you're working with some African Americans who have full-blown AIDS and you're making progress. I said, that's correct. I said, I have an open-door policy. Anybody can come in with patient's permission. You can sit there with them and go over their medical records. You can speak with the medical staff, the nurses, look at all the blood workups. And they did. Repeatedly for months. And then he invited me on. He said, I didn't want to jeopardize PBS's reputation or my reputation, meaning him, Tony Brown, by bringing someone on who we couldn't substantiate, but we've independently established and proven to ourselves and our own medical investigators that you're doing something no one else in the world's ever done. You're curing AIDS. At the same time, you're being attacked because you're curing AIDS. I said, that's America. And then from there, I was on, I think, 8 times with patients and their medical records. Every one of those was vetted. Then Bill McCrae, multi-Emmy award-winning producer over Channel 5, he did the same thing. Took months. And then Earl Caldwell. And then the Amsterdam News, Bill Tatum. Tatum spent weeks there. And Doug Henderson, the African-American journalist, who was writing about this and actually got a screening of the first film I did on AIDS at the Lincoln Center with a press conference afterwards. So I had all the members of the African-American community in being open about it. But the biggest event was at the Harlem Theater. I thought I was doing a little lecture. And I was asked it was two people who asked me, Doug Henderson and Bill Tatum, would I just come up and give a little lecture up there? I said, fine. I'd lectured in Harlem many times. So I went up to Harlem, and the place you couldn't get in, it was packed. And then I couldn't get up on the stage because the Nation of Islam had this whole group of dozens of African-American doctors getting up and talking about using the Gary Null protocol. I'd never met any of them. Evidently, they just came by the center and would talk with the medical staff and be given the protocols and the patients. At one time, 90% of all the people we were treating of 1,200 people with AIDS were African-Americans. There were so many people that for 3 straight days we packed the Apollo Theater, and it would have continued being packed, but I had to go on the road. I had commitments in California for lectures. And that wouldn't have happened without the communication within the African-American community and through Louis Farrakhan's group. And, you know, they just wanted people to know that the African-American community was ahead of the curve when it came to treating AIDS. Not a word of that anywhere in the media. Not a word of that on Wikipedia. So imagine that. Put that in your mind for a second. You cure what diseases that no one's ever cured, ever, not a human being on the planet. You do it easily and repeatedly. It takes about 16 months. And they condemn you for it. That's America. That's journalism. That's the AMA. That's the entirety of the medical industrial complex. And it was only the African-American community that stood up for the truth. So now Robert Kennedy, and I told him this. I told him this story. I says, so Robert, I know what you're going through. I've been there. So if it takes Louis Farrakhan to galvanize his people to do a demonstration in Washington and embarrass the Black Caucus to stop looking at the political weight of doing something for the people, their own people, or doing something to maintain their support from the special pharmaceutical industry, which is the most powerful lobby in Washington, D.C., then so be it. I'm going to hold off my commentaries that I have, which are blistering, for tomorrow, because I wanted to get more of your questions. Now, there's 2 ways you can do it. I answered a bunch of questions the other day. You call in and you can either make a statement, which we're happy to air, if it is empowering, and I'll answer your questions. And that number is 862-800-6805, 862-800-6805. Or if you don't feel comfortable doing that, you can just email us, and Elizabeth will get on and ask me whatever questions you've asked. And she's on right now, so let's go to Elizabeth, standing by, who has read your emails. And Elizabeth, which emails do you have?
I'm a gentleman called Howard. He's a medical doctor. And he says for the last 2 years, he has been doing a great deal of research on vaccines, and he feels that it's extremely threatening and career-ending to challenge vaccines if you're a medical doctor. And he's asking, what would you suggest would be a way of honestly addressing the vaccine issue without losing his medical license? Because he was saying that his wife and he have had many discussions over dinner, and they've seen what's been done to other doctors, and he is sincerely filled with fear on how his whole life and family's life could change for the worst. But at the same time, he doesn't want to live as a coward. So he'd really appreciate your insight.
I'll give him an example. And this is true for any cause. Let's expand it beyond vaccines. Right now in the United States, if you were to be a medical doctor and you challenged the standard American diet, you would be attacked. And if you challenged fluoride, if you challenged the mercury, silver fillings in your mouth, which 52% of silver filling is mercury, you'd be attacked. If you challenge how psychiatry treats people with normal life issues as if there's a brain chemical imbalance, when in fact science shows there's no brain chemical imbalance, you'll be attacked. Now, depending upon how threatening your truth is the measure of response they will throw in your direction, from astroturfing, bots, agent provocateurs, and simply lying about you, as they do repeatedly on Wikipedia. You'll suddenly find yourself with a profile that you can't change that demonizes you. So any patient wanting to look up you would suddenly look up as they do Deepak Chopra or some of the other doctors, and it's not an honest or positive profile. So then you're going to say, well, I don't want to go there, and you lose patients. But that doesn't mean you can't do something. The question is, how do you do it and still maintain your practice? And what I suggest is the first thing you do is start to communicate with other doctors who have been challenged, like Dr. Sears, for example, and ask them, what did they do to you? At the state board, they try to bring you up on disciplinary charges. Did they engage the mainstream media in attacking you, which they frequently do? And then understand these are legitimate concerns you have. It will be a career ender for a lot of people. For example, I believe it would be a career ender for Robert F. Kennedy. Now, he's a Kennedy, and I believe that he is the beneficiary of his family trust, so I don't believe we have to worry about where he's going to get his next meal. But if you're a normal attorney and you take on the wrong people, they have 100 ways of getting back at you, as does the deep state. So what would I do? I would set up a group of anonymous physicians telling the truth about vaccination, and then get it a whole article about your experience and the science, and cite the actual peer-reviewed science that they haven't been looking in the right place. They haven't looked in toxicology, that there's not a single study showing a single ingredient in any vaccine ever to be safe. To the contrary, there are multiple toxicants in these vaccines, and share that with other doctors. Now, there are multiple doctor websites, so if you really were diligent and you got someone who understood internet marketing, within 3 to 6 months, you might have 10, 20, 30,000 other physicians who are also concerned. And then you have a section saying, my primary concern about vaccines, blank, 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 and let them fill in that blank. And then for those doctors who believe that you're wrong, say, if you believe I am wrong, show me where I'm wrong. Lay out your argument of showing where my argument is deficient. And then they have a chance to do that. And then you'll see that you can respond to them by deconstructing the fallacy within their argument or learning from their challenge if they're correct. Either way, you're getting your message out, and other doctors are now joining in. And with that, within a year, you could have a group large enough that you could then bring that in a form of articles and submit those articles, not as scientific articles, but rather as opinion articles, to different scientific and medical journals, and also see someone who's willing to come out of their anonymous position to debate on behalf of all the anonymous physicians. That's how I would approach it. Okay? Thank you, Elizabeth. We're out of time today, but I look forward to sharing more and answering more people's questions on tomorrow's program. Tomorrow, I'm going to have a commentary that I was up yesterday writing, and it's a powerful one. Also, Chris Hedges' commentary. Also, deconstructing, is the impeachment proceedings biased? Is it wrong? That's separate and should not be conflated. Do you like Donald Trump? You can hate Donald Trump and everything he stands for, and you could be right. But that does not mean that that is what he should be. He shouldn't be impeached just because we don't like someone. And what if he has done things that are impeachable, but so too did other presidents, including Barack Obama, and you chose not to go open that door because then his supporters would open up the fact that why is it okay to impeach him on this when you didn't impeach Obama? So there's a strategy to their to what they're doing, but it could end up working against them and end up causing Trump to be elected another time. So we're going to dissect this because we don't support either party. I don't support any of these people. I'm for third-party people. And none of them are engaging in the truth. So we'll try to open that door for you tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.